Condon.
Ken Miller. Trent Condon. Miller and Condon on 1460 KXNO. And now on 106.3 FM.
All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome in. Miller and Condon here on a Friday, Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. Trent Condon, Ken Miller. For the next couple of hours, talking sports with you. Thanks for spending some of the morning here with us. The BMW of Des Moines guest list looks like this. So we will start at the bottom of the hour, thereabouts, with our friend John Cannon. Covered the NBA for quite a long period of time, whether it be in Golden State or in Phoenix. And sadly, the curtain has come down on the NBA season last night as Golden State went on just a monumental run, 21-point run, and just took it to the Celtics, and it was over at that point. So we will talk to John Cannon about the NBA, in particular game number 6 from last night. Dave Sproul will finish out hour number 1, catch up on the Cyclones with her buddy from KASI, 1430 on the AM dial. To begin hour number 2, we will head to Vegas. Mike Palm will give us go inside the numbers a little bit with Mike Palm. Look forward to that on his weekly spot. And then Tom Kakert, a lot of Hawkeye news. A lot of Cyclone news as well as the recruiting continues. Boy Campbell and his staff have had a terrific week, but we'll talk Hawks with Tom Kakert about 11:30 or thereabouts. Men's basketball schedule, the opponents, not the dates, but the opponents. Who will you get home and home? Who will you go there and not get the return visit and vice versa? We'll talk to Tom about that and other stuff. Before we give you a chance to win some barbecue from our friends at Claxons, Claxons, 3131 8th Street Southwest in Altoona, online, claxonbbq.com, claxonbbq.com. Well, Trent Condon, we'd hoped we'd get a Game 7. It was not in the cards as it was too much Golden State. It was too much Draymond Green, Steph Curry, Andrew Wiggins and company. They were just the better team when it was all said and done.
It really was. They figured it out after that Game 1, went to the Iguodala. That didn't work. And then you get healthy Peyton, at least as healthy as we saw since the injury. They figured it out. Mm-hmm. Talked about Steve Kerr a lot here over the last week and a half, and he's a wizard once again. The defensive intensity that they had after 2 days off where the whole rhetoric, can't turn it over. You can't turn it over.
Yeah.
And they turned it over 22 times.
It's amazing.
That defense, yeah. And we think of the Warriors, and we think of Steph and the great shooting, and Clay, one of the best pure shooters we've ever seen, Draymond doing his thing. We think about all these different elements, but it's the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the defense, again, that showed up in a big-time way last night.
And the offensive rebounding, too. Yeah. They just killed him on the offensive glass, Golden State did. Look, Draymond Green played his best game of the series last mm-hmm. night. His last two have been his best two. He looked like the Hall of Famer that a lot of folks believe he is. And it's hard to make a case that he's not going to be, hear his name at some point, get into that hallowed building because, man, oh, man, in a clinching game, 12-12 and 8 assists last night, he was terrific.
He was excellent.
He was great.
He made a couple of big pull-up shots.
Yeah, he got a couple of threes.
Yeah.
There was a pretty good prop out there. You know, I almost took a taste of Draymond making a three because he's been so brutal.
Right.
But he had two of them last night.
And hadn't made one in the series until he knocked down that first and added one more. He is in the middle of everything.
Yeah.
He's out there.
Yep.
He's not a likable figure if you don't have a rooting interest, but
right.
He is so important for what they do. And Steph's 33-footer, just a thing of beauty. There, what was that? Is that in the third quarter that he hit that one?
Yeah, I think.
When they were stretching it out.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep. Because it was, 22 to 16 at one point in the basketball for Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And then blink and boom. Boston couldn't make a shot and Golden State couldn't miss a shot, and away they went.
I took another taste on the lifeline on Boston, just gave it a little shot.
Did you? Went down with the ship.
I did, yeah. Just went back to that well one more time. Of course, had the bet that we talked about, had the Pacific wager, had another Golden State wager that I had from, oh boy, it was back towards the beginning of the playoffs. So, you know, kind of hedging a little bit, playing around a little bit, and it was more than anything hopeful. But
right.
What we learned again last night was Golden State, they just figured it out. They figured out how to play, and plenty of talk about them with John Cannon. The Boston side of this. Young team, Mm-hmm. Tatum's 24. Mm-hmm. Brown's 25. Even Marcus Smart's only 28.
Right.
Feels like he's a little older than that. He's still only 28. Got a good core. They have no bench.
But Trent, the bench, what did Van Gundy say at one point? At one point, early in the second quarter, their bench was a minus 50? You know, the plus-minus stat?
Wow.
Negative 50 at one point. I think it was like 11 minutes, probably 13 minutes into the game, if you want to look at it that way. The bench was just horrific, just terrible last night. Killed him. Horford was great.
He was?
He was. I mean, he did everything he could. It's not that he wasn't going to go down without a fight. He played exceptionally well. Brown was good. But Tatum, not so much.
Is he hurt?
Or fatigued?
Yeah.
I mean, the turnovers that he had in the playoff run for him was just, he's a turnover machine. He's a really good player, don't get me wrong. But it wasn't his series. It was Steph Curry's. It was Andrew Wiggins. It was Draymond Green's. And it was Steve Kerr's. It was, four titles now. I guess, Trent, that for the first time in a long time, Steph Curry could put his head on his pillow knowing that he's a Hall of Famer, because until he gets that MVP in the playoffs, he doesn't belong in that group. Come on, please.
Ooh, a lot of stupid narratives. What do you talk about all-timers? And
he's on the list.
Well, I heard Bill Simmons talk about kind of the pantheon he had the book of basketball, and he's always still working on it. He moved into his all-time top 10 after last night.
It's hard to quantify, right? When you put, match up eras, etc.
But he moved him ahead of guys like Shaq, Oscar Robertson.
Okay.
And on the surface, even that maybe feels like a hill too far. But something that I talked with you earlier this week, he changed basketball.
He did.
The game has evolved so much, and it doesn't matter if you're watching a high school game or a college game or AU basketball. The way that he has changed it, he has given...
His impact on the NBA, Trent, has been...
It's bigger than those guys.
It is.
Because guess what? You're not going to be 7'1", 300 pounds like Shaq.
No.
You're not going to be just a physical dynamo like Ron.
But he's more than... He's a great shooter.
Yes.
Except for game five. He's a great shooter. But that's not his only game. Because he can guard you a little bit.
He can.
And he can, he's not scared. He's got a little Allen Iverson in him. Putting the ball on the floor and taking it to the goal.
A couple of his biggest shots were at the rim. Again, last night, when Boston had another little run, I think.
And then he kind of runs into the crowd a little bit, goes past the backboard, and kind of flexes a little bit with his mouth guard dangling out of his mouth.
He had a couple of good ones. One after I think they went up 22 and he was pointing to the finger for the ring.
Yeah, another one. I saw that, right?
Late in the game in the fourth quarter when he hits another one, and then he's putting his head down on a pillow, putting him to sleep.
Yeah, when he put the ring, put the ring on, did that little meme or whatever you call those things. Boy, you better seal this deal.
Right, exactly. Don't let this one come back. Yeah, that one's going to linger for a while.
But once they did take the lead and assume their dominance as they did in the second half, I mean, Boston tried to get close a little bit. But it never felt like, almost like a cat in a ball of yarn.
Yeah.
It's kind of how Golden State was playing with them. They were toying with them a little bit.
And it took so much for them just to get it back to 10-12, whatever it was at the end of the fourth quarter. And you knew they had to carry that momentum early.
Right.
And it just, never could get over the hump. They got it to 8 at one point, but that was as close as they could get. They expended so much energy just to get it to that point after being down 22. It wasn't in the cards for them. It just wasn't. And it's a better team. Tatum, I don't think this is an indictment on Jason Tatum.
No, I don't either. Like you said, I think this is a young team. They're going to be back. They're going to have another opportunity to go one step further.
And they have a good mid-level exemption, so they can bring in a good veteran with that exemption. I was thinking of a guy, though, because they don't have your traditional point guard. And now, not a starter. But I just had this fleeting thought as I was driving in this morning. Who would make sense? And it's a guy with local ties. Mm-hmm. Monte Morris.
Mm-hmm.
You put Monte Morris on this team, and he plays 18 to 22 minutes a game in the playoffs, can knock down an open three, knows how to run your team, doesn't turn it over.
That's true.
He is.
Be an anomaly on that bunch.
But you throw a guy like that.
That's not bad.
But a player like that doesn't demand starters minutes, is not going to be a guy that you need to go out there 36 minutes a game. He is happy in that role on a great team. I think he would be a perfect compliment.
Yeah.
A guy, if it's not Monte, a guy very similar to that.
It's a good fit. That would be a good fit.
And if Marcus is being a knucklehead and he's turning it over a bunch, we're going to go here.
Yeah, they bought his flops early in the game. I'm not sure if you saw a couple of getting the kids to bed.
But I did
early
know.
In the game, yeah, he was
selling.
He was selling, and the refs were buying early in that basketball game. Boston came out. They were 12-2 to begin the basketball game. I think it was 2-0 Golden State, and then a 12-0 run for Boston, and then that run. Started in the first quarter, and they just kept extending, and Boston just kept missing shot after shot after shot. And so it ends. The curtain comes down on the NBA, and normally at this time of year, we'll see at Christmas, but that's not the case this year because the NFL's got a full slate on Christmas Day.
We'll see in 2023.
We'll see in 2023 in April. Once they cut down the nets in college basketball, we'll pick up on the NBA. But look at Trent, we say it every year. It's a great sport. These guys are incredibly gifted. Very physical. It strikes you when you go from the college game after not watch, because you and I both watch Timberwolves, and that's kind of our extent.
Yep.
Maybe the Bulls.
Yep.
Periodically, but we don't watch a ton of it. But it's just the difference is stark, isn't it? As far as what you can get away with and can't get away with in college when you go to the pros game. But these are men. These are absolutely men that we're watching. I think the biggest revelation that we saw in this playoffs, to me, was Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah.
I never thought that that this guy had this type of game. It's the defensive end of the floor that just blows me away with him. He's accepted his role, and he's flourished in his role.
Hits 4 3-pointers in the game last night.
That including his first one, which got him going.
18, 6, 5, 4, and 3. That's his line. Points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks.
Hmm.
Just filling up the stat sheet, a little bit of everything, and then great on-ball defense. A guy that you wondered about what was ticking inside of him.
He's not the most motivated dude, Trent. And I get it. Not everybody. We've got a lot of guys want their summer off. But he's got a chance to lead a country. Would it kill you?
Well, you maybe have a little bit different view today. Your view is a little bit different because
just a tad, right?
It's your country.
Right,
also.
right.
Pretty good guy, though.
No, he absolutely is. Absolutely is. We happen to know his head coach, who I'm guessing Nick Nurse thinks the world of him and would love to have him.
One more thought I had in my notes for today, and it's about a guy that has been hard for me to understand. That's Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Now a title without him. Of course, they got the first one without him.
Yep.
2 and 3 years while he was there, and now this side of it. First of all, his decision-making is the part that I just never got.
Mm-hmm.
He just wants the ball. He's just a basketball player. But I hated the way he went there. You're coming off a historic team that, yes, got beat, but coming off a historic team that won, 73 games that year, and he'd go there. He took the easy way out.
Yeah, you know what it was good for? On one, it was bad. It looks kind of it hasn't worked out so far for Durant.
Yeah,
it helps Curry's legacy.
It absolutely does. Got two without him.
Uh-huh.
One before, one after, and that takes him up certainly another level. I think when you're talking about him historically, but Kevin Durant, that decision, all right, that was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Went there, got a couple of titles, and I think he assumed, well, everybody then now will consider me the greatest player in the league because now I got the titles.
Right.
Yeah, but you went to Golden State, who was a ready-made team. And yes, you took him up to another level and you were great, but it didn't have it. Now you're trying to do it on your own. And it's not working. His decision making, if there was some other ears in the camp, maybe how different? Because he's just a basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he wants to do.
Right.
He wants to do that.
And fight with his critics.
Right. Yeah. But it's about the basketball with him. But he's another unlikable figure. Certainly for me. I can't wrap my mind around that guy. And this one, I think, is kind of another knock against him, too. Okay, you made that decision. Then he left. And now look at what they're doing without you and what how different maybe his legacy can be. And as he gets older and he's in, 14th year in the league?
Is he that long now? My gosh.
Is he going to have another title?
Depends where he goes, I guess.
Is he going to push his way out again?
Uh-huh.
He hitched his wagon to Kyrie.
Yeah.
Another not great decision there.
I want to bring this up away from basketball. Alex Cohen, the voice of the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
He tweeted last night, the iCubs, is it still Omaha? It might still be Omaha.
Okay.
Regardless, they had a game last night. A game that was a full 9 innings because the iCubs lost, meaning that they took their turn at in the 9th inning. 15 hits, 10 runs, 7 home runs, right? So 9 innings, 15 hits, 10 runs, 7 of which left the ballpark. How long did that game take to complete? How long would a major league game take to complete?
3 hours and 52 minutes.
Okay, I was going to say 3 hours and 30 minutes, right? Somewhere yeah. around there. 320, yeah. three something anyways. The game last night at Principal Park, nine inning, 15 hit, 10 home runs, seven via the home run ball, with a pitch clock, took an hour and 55 minutes to
beautiful,
complete.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
You know what? MLB is looking for the silver bullet mm-hmm. as to how they can maybe expand their fan base. I mean, they still get the television numbers. Major League Baseball's fine.
Yep.
I do got to get a kick out of the gloom and doomers. But it's a fair criticism of the length of games in Major League Baseball. Buck 55, as John Bolenkamp would say in a tidy, hour and 55 minutes. That game was over at Principal Park.
So I remember the first time they installed the pitch clock, and I went to one of the early season games that year down at Principal Park. And the first probably two innings, it was a little bit jarring. I was sitting
yeah, I could see that.
Up there a little bit, and you see it, and you also saw people peeking at it a lot more. You saw both the catcher and pitcher kind of looking out there a little bit more, and after a couple innings,
they get used to it, right?
And you don't even notice it as a fan. It's nothing that is a huge impactful thing. And what do they put a little clock in the score bug as you're watching a major league game? If they do that,
I wonder. Yeah,
Max Scherzer's going to bitch and complain because that's what Max Scherzer mm-hmm. does. And when he has the baseball, he controls the pace. He wants to go fast, he'll go fast. He wants to go slow, he'll go slow. Got to evolve. What is it? Evolve or die?
Right.
You got to evolve. And for major league pitchers, and they're going to be complaining about it. Yeah. And the same thing for batters. Get in the box. Let's go. But go back and watch an old game. Flip on ESPN. Well, ESPN Classic's not a thing anymore. MLB Network when they're replaying an old game. And just look at the pace of play and how good it is and how entertaining it is and how much more engaged you are in the game.
So how do you institute it? Because if you go to spring training, there's no punishment, mm-hmm. right? I think it's the guys like Scherzer or, you know, the hard boots that hate change mm-hmm. that almost have to be out of the game or at the end of their career.
Yeah.
Because the guys obviously coming through the ranks now, they're used to it.
They absolutely are, yeah.
But an hour and 55 minutes for a baseball game, I mean, that's almost like you're not quite getting your money's worth.
And it's not like it was a 1-0 game.
Right, there was a bunch of runs scored.
Two hits on each side. Yep. Make it quicker, make it better. It's just, I find myself
Move
doing that all the
along.
Time. Yeah, because, all right, I got my phone out, and here I am on Twitter, and what happened? It didn't really matter. You just
Yankees, Red Sox, Sunday Night Baseball, that's 4 hours plus every single time.
Locked in. Start that thing at 4 o'clock. Maybe you'll get done by 9.
Right?
I'm with you. I've been a longtime proponent. Just the first time that I saw it mm-hmm. actually in place, just
so you looked at it for the first couple of innings.
Yep.
Did it bother you or did you?
Kind of. I was just like, all right, this is weird. It's different. It's a change. And I found myself looking at it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Well, how close are they getting to the pitch clock? But that's the other part. It's not a hard clock. It's not a buzzer goes off. And it is. It's to the umpire's discretion.
Right.
So if a guy's there and he is just getting ready for his warm up as it goes to zero, they're not going to. No, time. Call the ball.
Yeah.
That's not how it is. It is. It's a loose kind of interpretation mm-hmm. of a pitch clock.
Which is why I don't think you can do it at spring training, because the guys don't care.
Right, right.
You know, they're especially early, they're going to get their work done, and mm-hmm. they'll take their time doing it. And maybe, on the other hand, maybe since they are just, you know, loosening up and starting to go through and get back into game shape, maybe you don't want to put that extra pressure of pitching quickly on them. Because you could, you know, if an injury happens, whether it has anything to do with speeding up the pitcher or not, you know, it's going to come back and bite. I don't know how you're going to do it without waiting for, you know, some of these veterans to leave the game, which means we're a few years away from this.
Speaking of baseball, found it interesting here over the last day or two, a lot of negative columns being written, a lot of
on baseball
about Jed Hoyer.
Well,
and the rebuild with the Cubs and how it's not going well.
It's not a rebuild.
Right.
If you listen to Jed.
Yeah. The negativity that's happening here.
Mm-hmm. You know who's leading the parade? The Pied Piper of media in Chicago. David Kaplan.
Oh, yeah?
Do you watch his recaps?
No.
I feel bad for him that he's got another 100, whatever it is, or 80-something games of this. It's going to kill him.
He's being compensated. He'll be all right.
Yeah, that's true. He's making a lot of money, right? But no, there's people that aren't even watching Marquee Network. They've just given up on this team.
Is he hamstrung, though, by
Ricketts?
Yeah.
Well, Ricketts could, yes, I think the answer is yes.
He has not been playing with the full deck here.
No.
He has not been given all the keys to a big market club. They have cut payroll.
Mm-hmm.
They have slashed in different
ways.
Well,
what did Cap say? They're the fourth most expensive tickets, but it's the most expensive game day experience.
So not just getting in the ballpark.
Yeah, everything. You, I guess that means you park.
Mm-hmm. Four hot dogs.
Yeah, four hot dogs. I
couple
guess.
Of beers, couple of sodas for a family
right.
of four. Yeah.
Program. Who buys a program? Nobody buys a program.
It's got on it on your phone. Yeah.
Right. But it's the most expensive. But here's the what Ricketts has going for him. Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
There was a time it didn't matter if they're good or they're bad. You got to go to Wrigley.
Because they were usually bad.
They were usually bad.
And he still went.
Wrigley Field in the bleachers was, I can remember this. Being told that it is the biggest social scene mm-hmm. for single 20, 30-somethings in Chicago
yeah.
on the day of the game. The bleachers in Wrigley Field.
I remember those days.
It's
winking at somebody. Hey, I'll see you at Murphy's afterwards.
Yeah. And it's the whole Wrigley experience. Look, the hotel that he built is full.
Uh-huh.
Hotel is full, and it's not cheap. It's not cheap to spend the night there.
You're not getting a $79
rate. No, there's no breaks. No breaks. But yeah, it's Ricketts, and as Cap has said repeatedly, he's told us the last couple of weeks he's going to give them this year. They've got this year, but they better go out and spend some money and bring in some of this high priced talent. They've essentially gutted who's left from 16. Contreras,
mm-hmm. there it is, and Ian Happ kinda,
Hendricks,
yeah,
that's
about it. That might be it.
It might be it. Off the top of my head, Hayward.
The scary part is, though, it's not like this is an organization that is flush with talent down here on the farm. It's not that you look through that mm-hmm. system. Their number one guy, Davis, is a hurt.
Yeah.
Had back surgery, which is scary in its own right.
You know what I would like to see, and when we talk to Alex Cohen, we get him when the team comes back. Where was Morrell on the depth as far as prospect depth?
I think
what was he listed? Do you know?
I remember when he got called up and he had that great start in the triple and we talked about yeah. it and I looked it up. I think he was, Baseball America had him 9th and MLB.com
in the
had him
system or
like
overall?
11th. No, 11th. No, he was on the fringes of a top 100 guy.
Okay.
We're not talking about a can't miss. You know,
he
was,
looks like he is now.
He absolutely
he really does.
Looks like he belongs and it's yep. not just that he's a good player. There's just something about him.
Oh, the charisma.
Yes. He's got that yep. also. The things that are difficult to measure. Mm-hmm. He's got that in a big time way. But yeah, he wasn't some can't miss guy. He was not some guy that was anticipated. Oh yeah, he's going to come up and you know go to 3 or 4 or 5 All-Star games and be a fixture. You're hopeful. Right. And maybe he turns into a solid everyday guy. That's
right.
kind of what it was. Looks better than that, at least early here.
He does. We'll take a timeout. More NBA conversation. John Cannon's going to put a bow on this playoffs from a Golden State perspective as Golden State just hammered the Celtics. Dave Sproul coming up. Hour number two, Mike Palm will go to Vegas. Circus Sports sponsors him. Look forward to catching up with Mike Palm, Tom Kakert, likewise, and then we'll give you an opportunity to win some barbecue from Klaxons. Oh my gosh, Cubs are now tied with a team that started 3-22. That must be your Cincinnati Reds. Unbelievable. They're on pace to lose 100 ball games. Going to bet against that?
Not right now.
Miller and Condon, 1025, Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3.org
to register.
Now back to Miller and Condon on 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM. Here's Ken and Trent.
Hi, Miller and Condon. Welcome back. Just past 10:30 on a Friday Klaxons Barbecue giveaway. We will do that with four of you. If you haven't played in the last 30 days, you're eligible to participate. That coming up here in about an hour and 20 minutes. Right now, John Cannon. You can follow him on Twitter at John Cannon Sports. Covered the league for a long time, Golden State and in Phoenix. And Golden State, your 2021-22 NBA champions. John Cannon, good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm good. I'm better than I really thought I'd be. That affected me more than I thought that it would.
It was
watching those guys after that game.
Yeah.
Really, really, you know, just hit me how special this whole thing is.
No, it really is. It's unfortunate that it didn't happen at home. You know, you hate because there was nobody around for the most part to watch it. But that's the way it is, right, in sports and championships.
It makes it better, Ken, because it's just them.
Yeah, right? that's okay.
And their families.
All right.
And they don't have to share it with 20,000 people. And Draymond has said for years, because they clinched the first one in Cleveland, he said there's nothing better than clinching on the other team's home floor. Clinching at home's fine. I'll take it. But there's nothing better than clinching on the other team's home floor. And when you're doing it in a place that only one other team has ever done it, and that was in 1985, the Lakers beat Boston in the Garden. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, there was a bunch of Hall of Famers on the floor that night, no doubt about it. That's an interesting way of looking at it, John. You know what? I like that take. That's a good take. You know what else I liked was Andrew Wiggins and his coming out party throughout this playoffs, quite honestly. Maybe he was like this throughout the regular season, but I saw a different dude that we watched certainly as the overall number one pick in the Twin Cities. He's a different player. Boy, oh boy, his motivation was through the roof. Good to see that Andrew Wiggins has that game that, quite honestly, I wasn't sure he did.
Well, I'm going to argue that it's the same player in a different environment, and what I wanted to talk about today really circles back to that, and it's this whole Warrior organization and how it has succeeded since Joe Lacob bought the team. And I'm reading a book by Eckhart Tolle called A New Earth. And it's all about awareness of our own ego and how much of our decisions are made by an ego part of our brain that, if left to just do what it wants, it gets us into trouble. And it seems to me the Warriors have a line of men, and it's unfortunate that there aren't men and women, but right now they're men, from Joe Lacob, Bob Myers, Steve Kerr, Steph Curry, that those four men have the ability to manage their ego. They all have a big ego because they wouldn't be where they are without it. But they manage it. Joe Lacob understands, my job, write checks, hire good people, get out of their way. Let them do their thing. Bob Myers was a player agent and was a mediocre player. I'm not sure. I don't think he even played in the NBA. He played at UCLA, so he could play a little bit. But he was a player agent before he became a general manager. So he understands from the player's perspective how this whole thing works. Steve Kerr, backup for many years in the NBA. I think he started a little bit here and there, but he was mostly a sharpshooter off the bench, give spacing, especially with the Bulls, great fit in the triangle offense. He got to see how an ego that was unmanaged, Michael Jordan, made things miserable for everyone around him. Michael Jordan, I'm reading this book about Steve Kerr. Michael Jordan was a terrible person to be around when he was playing with the Bulls. And Steve Kerr understood not only how not to be that himself, but he understood as a guy who was a bench player how to keep your bench players involved and active. And that's something that I think Epe Udoka needs to learn, because you're right, his bench was terrible in this series. The Warriors' very first series under Steve Kerr, drank the numbers. It was going 10 and 12 deep. He was getting contributions from Leandro Barbosa and all these guys we've all forgotten about. They weren't great players at the tail end of their careers. They were guys nobody heard of. And so then it goes to Steph Curry. Steph Curry absolutely manages his ego. You know he's got one because the guy's pointing at his ring finger on the floor. Okay, so he's got it. But he manages it in such a way that he leads by example of doing whatever is best for the team, and he works the hardest. Jerry Rice did this with the 49ers. He works the hardest. So who on the team could say, oh, I'm not going to get those extra shots up? Because, you know, Steph's doing it. You got to do it. Everybody has to follow along when the leader puts his ego aside and does whatever is best for the whole team. And then it just transfers to Draymond and Clay and all these guys. If you have a big ego, and I think Durant is this guy, you won't last there. It just doesn't work. It doesn't fit. And that's where I'm going to argue with the Mitchell. How about that? Andrew Wiggins just needed this environment because he's a guy that's never led with his ego. He's never felt like, oh, I got to go get 30 every night. He's just wanted to be surrounded by people who appreciated him and let him play and be comfortable, and then he blossomed in that environment. So the book is A New Earth. I recommend it to everyone. You will be shocked when you see the behavior, your own behavior. You'll recognize, you'll go, oh, wait a minute. That was totally egoic, and it did not serve me. Let me do something different next time. And you'll also see it in other people around you. It's hysterical.
Going a step further with that, John, and certainly looking at Steph, getting another title without Durant. We talked about that a little bit later on. You go back to game five. He struggled with his shot. Didn't make a three-pointer for the first time in his playoff career, first time in 4 years. All the numbers that were out there, but he still impacted that game as they won it, even with him not shooting the basketball well. His legacy, it was a silly conversation before these finals. He needed an MVP to really solidify himself as a Hall of Famer. We know that that was ridiculous in its own right, but the emotion that we saw from him, and just, he is such a different guy than what we're used to as a superstar. He's an easy one. You don't have to be a Warrior fan to love Steph Curry.
It's shocking how many people hate him.
Yeah, I don't get it.
It tells you a lot about the country. You know, if you hate Steph Curry, it says a lot more about you than it does about Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. I mean, here's a guy that is a team player, a great player, transcendent player, never gets caught up in his own transcendency. And, in fact, my favorite Steph Curry quote was, they asked him when they made the finals, what's different about this than the first time? He said, well, I got parent-teacher conferences in the morning. You know, and that's totally Steph Curry. So, but yet, he's also the guy, and you've seen the video, I'm sure, shaking a champagne bottle and saying some things in that locker room. He was releasing some tension. He just knows how to do it and when to do it. And it's a crack up, because you guys work in radio. So you know, you've all worked for people who were managing with their egos. Mm-hmm. And you all saw where that leads. The Warriors, when Joe Lacob took over, the problem was, when you have bad leadership, and Chris Cohen was an awful owner, he was really one of the worst in pro sports, the bad people stay and the good people go. And when you try to turn that around, it's like trying to turn around an aircraft carrier, because you got all these bad people. Now, the good thing about pro sports, as opposed to like a university setting where everybody's got tenure, you can get rid of people quickly, but you have to know how to do it and when to do it. And Lacob has pushed all the right buttons since he took over that team.
Jordan Poole pushed all the right buttons last night. You mentioned the role players on this team. He's certainly one of them. You could tell that meant a lot to him. The culmination of winning a trophy last night as they did. He was terrific on the floor and certainly has a massive role on this basketball team.
And another guy, I'm just going to keep bringing this up, managed his ego. You know, star player coming out of Michigan, but then he had a terrible experience his first year in the NBA, wasn't really ready. But what did he worked all offseason that first year with Chris DeMarco. Again, the Warriors talk about who the assistant coaches are that help these guys. They give them the credit. Chris DeMarco was the guy that worked every day with Jordan Poole during the offseason that first year. The second year, they sent him to the G League, and he excelled in the G League bubble. Came back to the team toward the end of last year, helped them in that push that they made. They won 15 of their last 20 games and got to the play-in. And then this year, he had to manage his ego when Clay came back. He had to understand, look, I'm a backup on this team.
Right.
I've got to pick my spots. And it was a struggle. It wasn't always smooth. But, man, you used my term, Trent, at the beginning of this conversation. The Warriors figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And Jordan Poole figured out where his ego needed to be to make this whole thing work. And he did it. And, man, I loved last night on TV how much love the Warriors were getting from the national media, because I don't think they've ever really gotten it. The first thing took everybody by surprise. The second year, they lost it. Then Durant came in and it didn't count because you got a cheat code, right?
Yeah.
And then they lose in 19. They go completely off the radar. And I think people are just now saying, wow, this is really something special. And I'm just really happy, gratified that I was able to see it. And I was able to kind of be there from the beginning. I mean, a good friend of mine is their radio guy, Tim Roy. And he has been their radio guy for over 25 years. He did a lot of 17-win seasons. I mean, he could rattle off for you 200 NBA players that you've never heard of that played key roles on games that he broadcasted. And the day Steve Kerr showed up, everything changed. Mm-hmm. I really started with Lacob because he started getting Myers in. He got the pieces together. But when Mark Jackson, who was one of the most egoic coaches there ever was, he didn't want any good assistant coaches. He wanted to get all the credit. He didn't want his assistant coaches to ever do interviews. When he left the Warriors, 200 people in that organization hated him. And they brought in Steve Kerr, and it was like the sun came out. And I mentioned to you how all of a sudden they passed the ball. That's all they do. And so just being able to be part of that from the jump has been a great experience for me, and I'm just really happy to see it. And it's not going to end anytime soon, I don't think.
Well, we shall see. John, thanks for doing this for us. It was a wonderful playoff run. The right team won the trophy. I mean, there's no doubt about that. John, thank you.
Thank you, and I will talk to you guys in April.
Indeed. Take care. Good to hear from you. John Cannon, as we catch up with our buddy. Do you remember the pass? I don't know, maybe 2 minutes left in the first half. Draymond Green, essentially from the logo to Klay Thompson. What a pass.
He still got that, right?
Oh, my God. That was one of the wow moments where I jumped out of my... Just wow. He was great last night. Draymond Green was fantastic. Really was. Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
And you look at the way that Bob Myers has built this organization. Mm-hmm. There is sustainability. Even as these guys are certainly on the back nine of their career,
right?
There is sustainability there. And it's not what LeBron did at all his stops. It's all about now. 4 and 8 years, 6 finals in 8 years, and a year where they got the number one pick or had the worst record in the league. I think they got the second pick that year in the lottery. And here they are.
It's 10:45. We'll come back. Dave Sproul will catch up with Dave Sproul on Iowa State comings and goings. It's Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3. Hi, welcome back. Miller and Condon, Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. Dave Sproul momentarily. Before we get to Dave, Nick Mick, NCMIC likes to promote these farmers markets that are happening. Busy weekend tonight. Norwalk has their farmers market. It's at the Norwalk Christian Church tonight from four until 7. That's Friday nights now through the end of October. Saturday, busy day, Global Greens Farmers Market. That is at the Lutheran Services of Iowa Des Moines campus. The Uptown Ankeny Farmers Market underway from 9 until noon. Indianola tomorrow. Indianola will have one at the...
The fairgrounds.
At the fairgrounds. Thank you very much, Trent Condon, for helping me out there. So that's just a partial list of the week, but we'll try and do this each and every day. Sunday, Monday, not so much, as there are none. Dave Sproul joins us as we get into the Cyclones. Hello, Dave Sproul. How are you?
I'm spectacularly well. Congratulations on the new pup, by the way.
Jet slept last night. I couldn't be happier. Got a little sleep.
You had a little more pep in your step, I noticed, this morning.
I was just out to the world. Anyways, we're having a ball with Jet. Hey, Dave, let's get into Iowa State. And it's kind of a slow period, although there's a lot of camps going on. And man, oh, man, it's seemingly Campbell gets him there, he's got a chance to land him. And Iowa State has had a terrific run. What, they get four, I think, verbals this week alone, and some big names, some local names, in-state kids. Good to see.
Yeah, and didn't expect a Big 12 player to be coming out of Hartley Melvin Sanborn High School, but here we are. But the value in those camps in a lot of ways, I mean, there's a lot of them, but the big things is for the coaches to get a look at these guys in action against other competition that's kind of probably of similar skill level. I know there's varying skill levels as part of these camps. They're not all elite recruits, but, you know, it's not just one kid who's dominating 1A competition. You get to really see how they measure up to some of the other, you know, big school class kids. And the other part of it, too, is that you don't get that time you get to spend with the coaches there, some one-on-one, get to know kids a little better. Those are things Matt Campbell has talked about a ton, about how much he values relationships and how important that is in recruiting, building that trust with recruits and selling on what Iowa State has to offer in that way. So, yeah, those camps are pretty valuable. Not a place, you know, I want to hang out, which is a big reason I don't cover recruiting. But, yeah. It's pretty valuable to all these programs.
Well, big in recruiting weekend again. More official visitors will be on campus, and we'll talk more with that, Nick Osa, next week here on the program. Dave, it's the summertime. We've gone through spring practice. We've kind of gone through all the different position groups, what we anticipate to see as we ramp up towards August and we get to the camp and you get to hear from Campbell again when we get to that point. What are some of the things you're going to be working for? What are you trying to learn more about before, say, we get down to Big 12 media days and we really start to dig deep? What are you still trying to answer some questions on Iowa State football?
One of the biggest questions I'll have is whether Iowa State's going to stick with the basically the 3-4 alignment. It's probably not the best way to describe it, but the three down man alignment, three down defensive linemen, and see if that changes at all. You know, Ryan Hartclough does sideline for Cyclone Radio Network. He was on their radio show prior to the Cheez-It Bowl, pardon me. And he was talking about some of the incoming guys they got come in, and his suspicion, and he's a lot smarter about this than I am, is that some of the personnel coming in might not be the best fit for a 3-4 alignment. And obviously Matt Campbell and defensive coordinator John Haycock are willing to change things up if they feel it's the best fit for what they got. So I'm not sure. I don't think they're going to give much away. They don't like to give away anything, really, when it comes to, you know, injuries or schematics. So we might not really find out until game one, or maybe, you know, at some point during the season, they could even make the change. They initially made the change from a 4-lineman set to a 3-lineman set mid-season, and, you know, that's something that could happen again. But we'll see if we get any clues as to maybe some, any kind of schematic changes or just how they use the personnel they have. Maybe it's going to be different from what we've seen in the past.
You know, does you go back to last year, right? The expectations around this program for the first time in a long time. I mean, they made history. They were never preseason top 10. They were preseason 9 last year. We know how it didn't turn out. So this year, they're seemingly, I don't know, can they fly under the radar then, knowing the success that they've had? I'm not sure they can do that. But where I will go with you here is, it seems like I think Campbell would prefer this type of offseason, right, where he doesn't have all these returning guys, these names that everybody that follows college football, yeah, we know Will McDonald, we know a couple of these guys, Xavier Hutchinson, etc., but the other big names are gone. I'm thinking that Campbell might prefer this. Am I all wet?
Not entirely. One aspect of it that comes to mind for me is another aspect of coaching that Matt Campbell has talked about that he really loves, in addition to building those relationships with the recruits, is the teaching, the practicing. He's talked about he loves practice maybe more than games itself. Part of it may be the pressure and the speed of games. You have to make so many decisions so quickly, and that could really get on you no matter what level of coach you are. But you get time and practice to really work with guys and refine their skills and develop and improve, and he loves that, and I think his coaching staff embraces that as well. So, yeah, I'm sure in a lot of ways they're looking forward to working with this group because they have guys who are not proven commodities who have room for growth, and they can really get down to the nuts and bolts of things and work with them in practice and make them better.
So over to basketball, we do get some news yesterday as the basketball schedule getting closer and closer to being completed. The Big 12 Challenge against the SEC, it will be Missouri. Of course, the old Big 8 matchup there, you got the connections. I know there were some people out there, though, hoping to be something a little juicier, but that Missouri team might be pretty good. They got Noah Carter coming in, got another big transfer. Tigers might be pretty good next season.
Yeah, you know, I really haven't delved into where that program stands at the moment. I just think that the whole former Big 8 connection, I mean, that's how far it goes back, mm-hmm. as far as the Big 12 even, is going to be plenty of juice for this rivalry. And They get their share of talent down there. Iowa State gets its share of talent. And, of course, it's going to be a very different-looking team for Iowa State. We know that much when they hit the court. And it'll be a really interesting early-season test between that and the Iowa game and the Big East Challenge game. We're going to get a real, you know, kind of measuring stick, I guess, of what kind of team Iowa State's going to have on the floor this season.
You're number two at TJ Otzelberger. You're number one certainly went well and exceeded every single one of those expectations. Dave, enjoy your weekend. Dave Sproul, thanks for doing this. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Take care. Good to hear from you. Dave Sproul is our buddy from KASI 1430 on the AM dial, checks in. I'm anxious to see both teams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously you're going to look not entirely different. We'll know some of them, but certainly going to be some new pieces.
So just got a note on Twitter. Somebody sent this to us. CBS Sports has a full mock draft of all 58 selections. And at number 53, I believe it was, the Boston Celtics selecting A.J. Green.
Is that right?
Iowa State adjacent there. Talking about needing for some bench and a point guard?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Interesting. A.J. Green. Well, look, I hope he makes it. I really do. Yeah. It'd be great to see. Got a better chance at 22 than he does at 23. And don't think that that doesn't play into it. It is a massive, for whatever reason, certainly in the NBA, that means a ton. All right, we'll head to Vegas. When we come back, Mike Palm's going to join us, and we'll get Tom Cakert in here on the Hawkeyes. Claxon's Barbecue, our final hour of the week. Miller and Condon with you 10 to noon on Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO.